going to go on to the last case. And that is 123857 United States versus Clayton Jameen. Mr. Boland.
Good morning, Judge.
Oh, you've been so patient.
Good morning, Your Honors. Lawrence Boland appearing on behalf of the defendant, Clayton Jameen. May it please the court, counsel for the government. Your Honor, this is a case where my client in October of 2011 pleaded guilty to two counts of bank robbery pursuant to a plea agreement with the government. And, of course, a pre-sentence report is ordered. And it turns out that he was a career offender because apparently, as I understand it, I was not there at the time. I was in the case later on. I believe it was the aggravated battery. Was not included. The government or the defense did not have a full and complete criminal history, and so there was surprise to the defendant, and I gather everybody else, that he qualified under the guidelines as a career offender.
Has any circuit court concluded that state offenses may not be used for career offender purposes?
No.
So we'd have to create a circuit split to adopt your position?
Yes. However, in our brief, I think in the footnote, I list the cases that are held against me, or at least held that state court convictions for controlled substances are to be included as predicate offenses. However, the argument that I raised below and that I raised before this court, it is my position, has never been addressed by any of the circuits. The closest that I've come, that it comes to, is in the Poole case, a Ninth Circuit decision, it's the Rivera case, a decision, a dissenting opinion by Judge Poole, where he felt, and again, the argument is, succinctly stated, the very next provision under 994H, which is 994I, says and includes federal and state court convictions. The immediately preceding subparagraph talks about those things that are included as predicate offenses as being crimes of violence, and of course it's very broad, just as crimes of violence, so that would include a whole world of kinds of crimes of violence. But the next sentence says, it includes basically controlled substances under Section 401, and then it goes on to list under 841, 21, 952, 955, 959, and Chapter 705. All of those deal with various aspects of drug offenses. 75 deals with trafficking of controlled substances aboard vessels. 959 deals with distribution aboard an aircraft. 955 aboard a vessel.
Well, let me ask you this. If we adopted your rationale, I mean, it would be a big-time problem because we would basically have people who were convicted of state-controlled substance felonies, they would be subject to the career offender enhancement, while those who committed only two prior federal controlled substances offenses would be classified as career offenders. I think I messed it up. I meant on the state side, you have two state convictions, substantive drug offenses. And that kind of person would not be subject to armed career offender. But someone who had two federal drug convictions would be subject to the career armed offender.
That's correct.
Right.
And
you don't think there's a problem with that?
Do I think it's a problem? I think.
I mean, just from a policy standpoint, when you look behind what the guidelines are there for, even though I understand they're just suggested,
I think it's
an advisory.
I do think it's a problem, but everything we do is problem solving. The question is, what did Congress intend when it leaves out the word state controlled substance convictions in the immediately preceding section, and then in the following section makes specific reference to state court convictions. And under rules of statutory construction, you view the whole statute. You don't just look to it. And I think that you have to conclude, well, since it's not in the one above, but it is in the one below, one and Congress is presumed to intend their actions, one must conclude minimally that it's not clear.
What if the state crime could be prosecuted as a federal crime?
It could, certainly. But I mentioned to you the specifics of this. This court in the Knox decision went out of its way to list a whole litany of and point out how specific that section of 994 is, and that it was the intent of Congress when it came to controlled substances to be very specific in terms of what it wanted to be included as a predicate offense, as it relates to the application of the guidelines, whereas crimes of violence, it was very broad. And so if one concludes that it was the intent of Congress to be very specific in terms of what controlled substances it wanted to be considered for the higher sentencing, one must conclude that since it didn't state anything about state court drug convictions, it must have intended that it not include state court convictions, whether we think it's good policy or not good policy. That's the decision of Congress. And so what I say to the court is the decisions of the other courts don't deal with this. Even the decision by Judge Beasley, which the prosecution relies on, he mentions in his decision that there are cases where the Congress has made specific reference to state court convictions, and he even makes specific reference to this. But he does not point out the fact, and he does not discuss the fact that these two, apparently being one sentence apart essentially, are different. He just avoids that, and he goes on and talks much about what was talked about in the other cases. And so what I say to the court is that it seems clear to me that the best that can be said about it is not altogether certain as to what Congress intended. And, of course, if that is correct, I think that Congress intended that it not include state court convictions. And research on it is, as to the legislative history, it's not going to be particularly helpful because there's nothing that I found that says, the red flag, here it is.
Even if this were an error, would it be a harmless error given the district court statement that criminal history category 6 understated his criminal history?
Well, I think that when you talk about harmless error, that is usually a position taken by a defendant arguing on appeal that something was harmless error. We have rules. When I say that, I'm talking about the guidelines here and the application or the enforcement of those through the statute. And here the judge specifically found he's a career offender. And, could he have sentenced him to something close to that? I don't know. Would he have? I don't know. I do know that it amounts to almost 5 more years onto his sentence as a result of being considered a career offender. And so I think the question is not whether it's harmless error. The question is, do we have a proper interpretation and classification under the when you've got one back-to-back having inconsistent statements, one saying state court, the other one not saying state courts. And so what I say to the court in conclusion is, when you do have that, what we're doing is we're just guessing at what Congress intended. And the rule of lenity basically prohibits guessing. It should be resolved in favor of the defendant.
Thank you so much. So, Ms. Kostanek, come on up. Hello.
Hello.
You are... Yeah. Okay.
May it please this court, Andriana Kostanek on behalf of the United States. The district court did not err in sentencing the defendant as a career offender. The defendant asks this court to basically depart from every court that has addressed this issue and to hold that only federal offenses qualify as predicate offenses under 4B1.1.
You know, Section 994H states that, quote, offenses described in the Controlled Substance Act may qualify for career offender status. Specifically, which section of the Controlled Substances Act describes distribution of less than 1 gram?
Well, it would be 841.
Wait, no, wait.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What is the federal penalty for distribution of less than 1 gram of cocaine?
It would, under 841, it would not prompt a mandatory minimum because the quantity is too low, but 841A1 prohibits manufacturing, distributing, possession with intent to distribute cocaine, which prohibits the defendant's conduct in this case.
See, here's my problem. I just cannot imagine that this is what Congress intended. I mean, to take a minor Wisconsin drug distribution offense and turn it into the basis of a major federal sentencing enhancement, does the language of the Wisconsin statute under which he was convicted match the language of the offense described in the Controlled Substances Act? Maybe you can take me through a comparison, but I...
The Wisconsin statute under which he's convicted is Wisconsin Statute 96141, subsection 1. It provides, it is unlawful for any person to manufacture, distribute, or deliver a controlled substance or controlled substance analog. That mirrors 841. 841 provides, it is unlawful for any person to manufacture, distribute, or possess with intent to distribute a controlled substance, including cocaine.
How? Okay, so a delivery of less than 1 gram of cocaine, you are telling me that can be charged federally?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you know any cases?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, I can't cite Seventh Circuit cases in which we've affirmed convictions, but I do know that our office certainly has prosecuted cases that involve
less than 1 gram?
I cannot think of any examples off the top of my head. I would say that it is unusual for our office to prosecute those types of quantities. However, Congress does not distinguish in that fashion between quantities. So the Senate report implementing, or at the time that 994H was enacted, makes clear that it is trying to be to ensure a substantial term of imprisonment for repeat drug traffickers. So the distinction that it makes is in the type of offense, not in where that individual was convicted. I think that your concern in terms of distinguishing between quantities that are being distributed would create a very slippery slope. It would place a lot of obligation on the district courts to draw a bright line of what quantity would be sufficient.
I'm talking about less than 1 gram. I'm not causing problems for anyone up here.
So my question is, the Attorney General has a new policy now with respect to these lower quantities and these mandatory minimums. Would this less than 1 gram be impacted by that new policy?
The new policy is for when we seek a mandatory minimum under 841, so when we allege quantity in an indictment to trigger the 5 or the 10-year mandatory minimum. It would not.
But, of course, the intent of that policy, that new policy, is to get at little dippy cases like this, less than 1 gram of cocaine. I mean, like you said, the U.S. Attorney's Office here would never indict this case. I mean, I know I can't say never.
Yeah,
okay, but
we
likelihood
haven't been there
we've never
for
seen it.
30
yeah, we've
years,
never seen it. And so, you know, it just seems to me the intent of that new policy change is to get rid of cases like this. And so I'm asking it because, you know, I want to know what the implications might be because, you know, there might be some policy change or something like that.
The key thing with respect to the career offender guideline is not that the statute or the guidelines provide that this would have been prosecuted by the federal government. It provides that it is an offense that is described in the statute 841. It is an offense described in the statute. it is something that violates 841, and thus it qualifies under the plain language of both 994H and 4B1.2 in defining what a controlled substance offense is. I mean, essentially, the defendant asks you to read words into 994H that do not exist. He either asks you to...
Well, can you, again, tell me what section of 994H describes distribution of less than 1 gram of cocaine?
It would be 21 U.S.C. 841. It prohibits the distribution or manufacture or possession with intent to manufacture cocaine.
And do you know what the federal penalty for distribution of less than 1 gram of cocaine is?
Well, it would be set forth by 2D1.1. It is a very low offense level. It would be subject to a 20-year statutory maximum.
I couldn't find a sentencing range in the statute for an amount that minuscule.
No, not in the statute. It's set forth by the guidelines. 2D1.1 sets forth a table and ranks it in terms of the number of grams that are being distributed. So it would be a very low offense level.
Yeah, it would be right at the bottom.
Yeah, it would be at the bottom.
If at all. I don't know.
It would be at the bottom.
Of those 28, are there 28 criminal convictions that I read?
He has 28 criminal convictions.
How many of those would amount to something that would...
I guess would
contribute to be a career offender.
Only two, Your Honor,
which is
why under the plea agreement he was not considered a career offender. The 1994 aggravated battery didn't appear on his NCIC criminal history. So there's two qualifying convictions, the 1994 aggravated battery and a 2006 manufactured delivery of cocaine.
And were you, just as defense counsel, was taken aback when it turned out to be a career offender?
Correct, Your Honor. Right.
So nobody knew this at the time. No. This was the plea agreement, because I think this was a plea.
It was, right? Your Honor.
Yeah. And nobody knew this. I don't know. My guess is the strategy would have been different on both sides had everybody known that this might have kicked him into career offender. Perhaps not. But given that he only had one other conviction, and I'm not trying to excuse at all his conduct. He's a multiple bank robber. At least he did these two within 4 or 5 days of each other. But
yeah.
It just seems like there would have been a whole different process with this case.
And you know, for us, it's not just this case. Mm-hmm. It's what's coming down the pipe.
Right. I just want to make one more point about the textual argument, because he would require this court to read the word federal into the beginning of 994H, and it would modify not only controlled substance offenses, but crimes of violence, and it would wreak havoc on the sentencing system. It would mean that a predicate crime of violence in a state court, which is where most of crimes of violence are convicted, murder, aggravated assault, aggravated battery, would not qualify someone for career offender status. Alternatively, it would require you to read described in to mean convicted under, which is not what the statute has said, not what other courts that have addressed this have said. And I'll make one final point before my time runs out, which is this court in Damerville has held on point that 994H, upon which the defendant relies, sets a floor, not a ceiling, for what the Sentencing Commission can do in setting forth and defining the career offender guideline. The defendant argues that it is inapplicable because it deals with conspiracies. This court verbatim makes clear that it sets forth not the only offenses that qualify someone for career offender, but a floor, a minimum, which, even if you agree with the defendant's textual arguments, would provide the Sentencing Commission authority to implement or to promulgate 4B1.1.
Is there any more you want to say? Because I know your light is on.
No, that's all, Your Honor. We would ask that the government or that the court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Are you kidding? She can't wait to sit down. Okay. Yes, of course. Come on up.
There are just three quick things I'd like to point out. One, counsel for the government says that the language described in the statute, it says described in 841, is some kind of a generic terminology to be all-inclusive. And therefore, the plain language of it is clear. It's express. Well, the reality of it is, it's not clear. It's not express. Too many judges have written too many opinions and too many words that point out that it isn't all that clear. Secondly, by including state court convictions, you are including a whole new class of offenses, not just federal court convictions. She says that I would want you to read in there the word federal. Well, this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the federal system. We're dealing with federal statutes. Well, why would we want to read it? I would think that if the Congress, as is written in these opinions, if Congress didn't want state court conviction, wanted state court convictions or cases to be included, they would have put it in there, and they didn't. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. And you were appointed. And thank you for the truly fine job that you've done for your client. And thanks to the government, too. And the case will be taken under advisement. And we will be in recess until tomorrow. Until yesterday. Until the next time we meet again. Okay. Why don't you wait till we leave? That's the way we do it here.